Got to get the brain chunk out, man. That's I guess the only way to do it. You got to get that mushroom brain.
In the head. Well, you can take
a chunk of brain and the person can still live. I mean, come on. You think I got two chunks of brain? Come on now. I'm working on left side only.
Well,
sounds like it, yeah. One thing.
You suck. How dare you?
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's PlayStation Show. I'm your host, Max Scovel, and I'm joined today by Jada Griffin.
Back again. Once again, I'm here again.
You showed up. You're cool. Brian Altano was scared of rain, so he stayed in his house.
What? F you, Ed. I was not scared of rain.
You were too frightened of the rain. The skywater has returned.
It bounces right off of my bald head. It just goes bing.
The rain is terrifying.
Like the rain is terrifying. At home, I want to remind you that Brian is bald. Akeem, however, is not bald. And
No, I am not. Also, you know, you can use an umbrella, Brian, when you go outside if it's raining.
Why'd you say it like that, umbrella?
Because that's what you use.
But it's not called it's called an umbrella, not an umbrella.
Well, when it's raining, that's what you use, an umbrella.
Ella.
Emphasis.
Well, anyway, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. I want to talk about the Last of Us finale. Obviously, it's a huge thing. If you have been keeping up with The Last of Us, good for you. If you haven't, you may want to skip ahead to the middle of the show. Later on, we're going to talk a little bit about Dead Island 2, Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Akeem, you have some strong feelings about PlayStation Plus. Jada, you brought a box?
I got some boxes.
All right, we got some boxes here. I don't really know where we're going. I wasn't here when we were planning this. I took yesterday off, so I'm very curious to see where this is going. Without further ado, let's talk about The Last of Us season finale. Now, obviously, this is not a huge surprise to a lot of us who've played the game, who know where this is going. Extremely faithful rendition of, you know, one of the most gut-wrenching video game endings, period. And I think the show did a pretty solid job. Jada, what did you...
Yeah, I mean, I thought it really showcased just the very violent side of Joel that we haven't gotten most of the show. Like, we got little moments, brief, like, spots of him being violent and showing how just deadly he can be. But this finale really just put it all out in the open. I thought it was a solid ending. I liked the beats that they did with it. There was a couple things that I think didn't land as well for me as they did in the game. Some of the line delivery towards the end. I feel like some of the direct, I feel like it was felt a little rushed at times, directing wise, but overall I thought it was a very strong ending for the first season of The Last of Us.
Yeah. I wouldn't have said no to another episode somewhere in there. I do understand a lot of people saying that this felt kind of rushed towards the end, but I thought it was solid. I thought it was like it didn't feel like the pacing was off to me. But yeah, I think like seeing TV Joel like go, I think that like not having the player agency of like controlling this character and just watching him unload on a bunch of fireflies really made you go like this dude has a darkness in him that I think that the game didn't really get to at the same level. Like, it's obviously there, and you know, you still end up with the same moral debate about, you know, did he make the right decision? What would you do in the situation? That's like, you know, ethics 101. But I think that like in the show, like there was a lot of darkness that came out of him slowly. And it like, we got to watch that sort of materialize in big bursts. And when it did happen, I think it did a lot better of a job of hitting you in the head that this guy is not necessarily good. He's not a villain, but he's also not really the hero that I think like game Joel came out to be as you were controlling him for 20-something hours.
Something that's so messed up about video games is how much we kind of normalize mass murder. And like, I'm not, you know, obviously it's fun to shoot stuff in the head and I get it. Video games are violent. It happens. But also like, that's the thing the show really had to do. It kind of had to beat you over the head with how much Joel likes to beat people over the head with stuff. Like the parts where he was violent, it's like really, it's visceral, it's intense, it's in your face. And in the game, it's like it's kind of a means to an end to just constantly go around hitting people with bricks and stabbing people with shivs and stuff. It just kind of happens.
Yeah. Choking them out from behind. Yeah, right? Yeah, right, all the time.
Yeah. Akeem, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, the funny thing about what you're saying is, like, I mean, the series kind of alluded to how bad Joel is, you know, when we saw the scenes with his brother. Apparently, you know, they were quite the terrorists running around post-apocalypse. But I feel like this episode really brought that out, because obviously they were only talking about it, you know, in previous episodes, but now we actually get to see that.
Yeah.
In the season finale. I thought it was solid. Honestly, I loved that, you know, we got to see more of Ellie's backstory. Ellie's mom, Anna, played by, you know,
Ashley Johnson.
Amazing Ashley Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we all know her as the voice of video game Ellie. It was nice to kind of see how she's immune to the infection. And getting scenes and glimpses of her mom. Mm-hmm. What sucks, though, is that, you know, we obviously won't be seeing neither her or Troy Baker in seasons to come. We did get a glimpse, though, of the voice of Abby. She was mm-hmm. in this episode. She played one of the nurses, Laura Bailey.
Yep. Yeah, that was an awesome cameo.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's amazing, Craig Mazin said in an interview, I believe it was with The Wrap, that, you know, since we didn't see her face, you know, we can do whatever we want to with her in seasons to come. So mm-hmm. we might be seeing the voice of Abby coming back in some role in season two or a season three or however many seasons the show might get. I thought this was a solid ending. I don't know. I didn't feel it was rushed. I don't know. I don't know if that's just, you know, a few people that were just, you know, they're so in love with this series that they wanted more. Obviously,
that's like where I am, Brian. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't have minded a couple more episodes. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it was solid, you know, for what
it's
it was, though.
It's a weird kind of pacing thing with HBO shows, because occasionally, I mean, streaming in general, where they're not, you know, beholden to like network length episodes, which weirdly we are, but you know, like there's occasionally like a really short episode, and then you'll have one that's like an hour and a half long, and it's kind of this accordion effect. I thought the first Kansas City episode, I kind of wish that had been one cohesive episode,
just a double feature.
The first one is like a lot of setup, and the payoff is great, but it's kind of like that honestly felt like kind of a low point for the season, because most of mm-hmm. the sort of most of it is really episodic, like a different thing happens each episode, and that's really the only one where it felt like a kind of like a real two-parter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most TV shows have that problem, right, where they hit like episode like 5 or 6 or something, and there's like a kind of like a quiet lull, and then it crescendos up towards the finale.
Yeah, and I can't help but wonder if that's by design or something for the sake of ratings or what have you. But yeah, as far mm-hmm. as the ending went, I think I was okay with it being a little bit short, like quicker, you know, like I think it got to the point mm-hmm. pretty fast. I'm there's no way of knowing this because I know where it was going, you know, like I think it was that kind of thing where like it's, you kind of want them to, you know, cut to the chase or, you know, cut to the gunfight or whatever, like really just get to the point, and like I want to see where's this going to go. Like I'm kind of impatient because I've already seen it once. I know, you know, where it's headed. I'm curious for people who hadn't played the game if that felt rushed or if that just felt like kind of a, you know, really just...
I will say I'm the most envious of those people who got to like kind of watch the show and experience it like without playing the game. I'm a little envious just to see kind of how that like came across to them. Like definitely if you're in the comments and you watch the show and haven't played the game, please let us know. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm like very curious just to see everybody's opinions on just the show in general. And or
I watched the entire show with my wife who'd never played the game for a second, and she was stunned at the ending. And for me, I was just kind of like, yeah, that's the ending from the game for sure. Yeah. Like awesome, awesome work. But for her, it was just like, oh my God. And then we got in this whole conversation afterwards, like, hey, would we do that for our kid? You know, like it's one of those things that like, I think like brought that whole debate out for people. And yeah. I think without getting into The Last of Us Part Two too much, I don't want to get into spoiler stuff, but I think that like, there's going to be something interesting that happens. And I was talking about this with some friends about how in the game, Joel is just Joel from The Last of Us. But in the show, it's Pedro Pascal, who we mm-hmm. love, you know, like he's on Hot Ones and SNL and The Mandalorian. And like when you see him do something like this in the show, it seems out of character for him because like, he's such a sweet, wonderful guy, and you're like, why would he do that? And so I think it's going to affect the audience when the events of part two go down, because people are going to have a hard time separating like the actor from the character, where I don't feel like we had that as much with Joel in The Last of Us game, right? Like he's mm-hmm. a self-contained character that exists only in that world. I think your media literacy is kind of rock bottom if you walked out of The Last of Us being like, wow, a real stand-up guy, a hero, I would do everything he did, because like very clearly, like, you know, he's got some evil traits to him, and there is a lot of selfishness in there. But
he's got some demons. I mean, we all have some demons. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we want to open up the can of worms of, like, would you do what Joel did? But, like, I mean, I'm kind of in the camp with them. Like, yes, it's not the right thing to do, but given the circumstances, I'm probably aligned with Joel. Like,
it's tough because, like, I don't know, looking at the show and playing the game, the Fireflies operation didn't, you know, no pun intended, but their operation didn't really look like it had its shit together.
Yeah,
like,
it did not. It never did.
There's nothing about that scene where I was just like, okay, we're walking into a well-run, well-oiled hospital here, and things, they definitely have a clear understanding of how this is going to go down. Like, what they were doing was sort of just like, yeah, this could work. It wasn't like a guarantee. Yeah. So I think that's what makes the decision even more nebulous, right?
Yeah. I feel like if, like, say, like, the cure was in, like, a big town like Jackson or something like that, I feel like it would have been a lot more, like, believable that, like, hey, we've actually, you know, if we've done the research, we've practiced this, like, we know what we're doing now. Like, we've dissected, like, 5 other infected people already that weren't immune, so now we understand the biology of it.
Well, it's the whole thing is, like, the Fireflies are they're rebels, you know, they're a terrorist cell effectively, and, like, the whole time you're kind of like, oh, well, are they on the right path? Are they doing something right? And then meanwhile, something like Jackson is just a settlement. Like, that's a fairly, like, they're keeping things pretty small. They keep it pretty close to the chest. And I don't know. It's one of those things, like, Jackson is basically accepting that things are never going to go back to how they were. They're like, we're rebuilding. Whereas, like, you know, Fireflies are actually looking for a cure
to go back. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, is that going to happen? Is that going to pan out?
Right.
I mean, also, you know, the whole fact of, like, you know, them lying to Ellie and taking away her agency in the decision. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, and Joel knows that they lied to Ellie about it. So, like, it's, you know, it's one of those things that's like.
And Ellie knows, like in the moment and afterwards, Ellie's kind of like, are you sure? Like,
yeah,
you know, you don't buy it. And so I think that conflates the debate even further. Cause it's not like, did he make the right decision? But however he felt about what was right or wrong, he lied about it afterwards to, like, the person who's, you know, his symbolic metaphorical child, basically, in this situation. And, like, that's inexcusable, right? I mean, we all lie to kids because you have to, you know, protect them from shit. But
I feel like it's hard to believe, though, that you can't extract someone's blood to find a cure for something. I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that this person has to die in order for you to find this cure. I mean, like, I'm just kind of curious, you know, what that process looks like as far as, like, you know, them finding a vaccine or a cure for the infection. I'm just, you know.
You got to get the brain chunk out, man. That's, you know, I guess, the only way to do it. You got to get that mushroom brain.
In the head.
Well, you can
get
take
out,
a chunk of brain and the person can still live. I mean, come on.
You know? Not in this world with the.
What are you trying to tell us?
You think I got 2 chunks of brain? Come on now. I'm working on left side. Only.
Well,
sounds like it, yeah.
You suck. How dare you?
One thing this episode did do was obviously it had the whole flashback thing that sort of established how Ellie was immune, which definitely did some sort of like pregnancy gymnastics there. Not really the most believable birth situation, but, like, you know, whatever. But basically, you know, like
I mean, you don't just push on a pregnant lady's womb to, like, push the baby out like the undead did. That's not how it works.
When the water breaks, you got about 45 seconds. That baby gets shot out of there like a Nerf ball. Like, it's, but no, like the clicker came in and, you know, bit her mom. And then it was like, I guess she had mushrooms through the umbilical cord or whatever, which is, I like that it's all made up. You know, it's all fictional. But I do appreciate that, like, Craig Mazin, I think he talked about this, about how he really wanted to bring, like, a science fiction element to it. Mm-hmm. And, like, the, you know, the adding the details about, like, you know, parasites in flour and, you know, I don't know. It had, like, a very, it felt very Chernobyl to me. In this case, it's like, it's, you know, again, it's all fictional, but that felt grounded. That felt real.
Yeah.
It also adds a whole new kind of level where there's sort of a, you can kind of triangulate this thing where that has Marlene showing up and being like, yes, I will take care of your kid. Thinking that Ellie does not have mushrooms in her or whatever. And then coming across her, presumably having some idea what Ellie's deal was, kind of keeping an eye on her from a distance, I'm guessing. And then, you know, at the end of the left behind situation, you know, Ellie's cooped up in a Firefly Stronghold, where they're keeping their pipe bombs in the back of the nacho restaurant. And like, you know, she has to kill Riley. And it's like, I'm assuming she did the kill herself, but then did Firefly show up? And is that when they capture her? Because when we first meet her, she's chained up. And like,
yeah,
it sucks because like they I'm guessing, you know, Marlene knew something was up. Marlene was like, okay, this is, you know.
Yeah, because Riley was supposed to ship out the next morning and head out. And so like when mm-hmm. Riley never showed up, Marlene mm-hmm. and Firelight most likely came and they found Ellie probably there. Probably yeah. a mess.
That I feel like when you kind of line all that up, it makes Marlene like way creepier. You know, like she's just kind of she's always sort of seen Ellie as a piece of cargo in a sense.
Yeah.
And it maybe not. I don't know. Like maybe she was grooming her to be like a, you know, a Firefly officer or whatever, which is, you know, putting her through the Fedra, you know, military training and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's you can read into it however you want, but I think it's I don't know that connecting those dots, the fact that she was sort of there when Ellie was born. And then she was there when they were effectively going to kill her is like, and she's like, yeah, I feel mm-hmm. guilty about it. It's like, yeah, do you though? I don't think so. Not so much, you know? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Let us know in the comments what you thought, dear listeners, viewers.
I do have one other thing to add, and it hasn't been confirmed yet. And I think I might be alone on this, but during Joel's killing spree, you see somebody like take off down a hallway and it, when you get the close up, it's all just black. Like you can't see the person, like features whatsoever. But I swear, if you go and look at it, there is a braided ponytail there, which alludes to a character from Last of Us 2.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, it's at 33 minutes and like 19 seconds. So if you are a conspiracy theorist about things like that, check it out.
There's one thing we should talk about. So we got super early screeners for this, and they were so early that they were like, hey, full disclosure, some of the effects are not finished here. And I don't know, I think I saw the finale like six weeks, 2 months mm-hmm. ago, something like that. It was a long time ago, and they had extremely unfinished giraffe effects. And I'm not knocking this, like obviously it's all work in progress, and it was fascinating to see where they were at that point. And this stuff obviously comes together very quickly. The finished product looked great. I'm not trying to knock
it's a real giraffe.
Yeah, it was partially real giraffe, but there's also parts where they had to do some, you know, comping in and out. But the version we saw had some of the funniest like placeholder stuff I've ever seen, where, you know, they're like up against basically a big blue screen. They're going to add in, you know, the city background there. But the one that killed me was at one point, and we're watching like, oh, the performances are so good. And then at one angle, it just has like three separate small videos of just generic giraffe stock footage.
Just like clip art. Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, just note to self, add giraffe later kind of thing. Like, and it completely broke me. It was like such a, like, I don't know.
I'm surprised they didn't just use like a childhood toy that has like the stick with like the horse head on it, but a giraffe head.
Honestly, yeah, there was a shot in there where it was just like, it was like a fake head on a stick, and then it cut to a real giraffe on a blue screen, and then it cut to like stock photos of giraffes. And so like that whole scene, which is one of the most touching moments in the game, the version Max and I saw, it was just kind of like, oh, that's hilarious. But it was, for me, it was like, I love to see how like mm-hmm. the sausage is made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
So it was fascinating to me. Like there was also a lot of moments where like there would, you know, be like a slow twangy country western song and all these like panning shots of like the apocalypse and how empty all the roads were, and then it would cut to a shot of just like a busy highway, and I would be like, oh, there's a lot of people out in The Last of Us today. I guess everyone's like running errands. And it was like, oh, they didn't comp the cars out yet. Fine. Yeah. Totally cool.
No,
or like the ADR was really great too. Like you would get like a voice come in and be like, all right, Ellie, let's go. And it'd be like, okay, fine, we can do it. And it was just like, oh, you didn't pipe in the actual VO yet. Like, so it's, you just have like somebody on staff doing that. It was fascinating.
I love that awesome. Stuff. Like that's something that's also, again, refreshing about, I guess, non-gaming media, is that, you know, that wasn't supposed to be shown off, but they do have a little behind the scenes thing at the end of every episode. And like, we have to wait until like maybe there's a behind the scenes developer documentary or like a GDC talk or something mm-hmm. that gives you any insight into what a game looked mm-hmm. like prior to getting finished. Like, I think there's that feeling of like, if you look under the hood, people are going to pick it apart. And that GTA 6 leak, sure as hell, that showed that people don't understand how things get made. But like, seeing how things get made is really cool, and it's inspiring and it's fascinating. And the thing that I didn't know about is like, I read a lot of like older, like behind the scenes movie making books, and there's, you know, frequently like pre-digital stuff. And so seeing kind of what is standard now, they had a lot where I think they were comping together two separate takes, where basically it looked like there was a giant rip down the middle of the screen, and you had like basically the same camera angle, but it was like maybe it was handheld, maybe it was slightly moved slightly. And so it just looked like there were two kind of off-center angles, and they were, and I, you know, the finished product, you would never be able to tell because they, you know, stitched it together perfectly. But I don't know, it was so cool. And also, I don't know, it was just the giraffe. I just love that it was like the giraffe thing was like one part. I was like, I cannot wait to see how they do this. And then I got to see like the most bizarre half-baked version. Let's talk about Dead Island 2. This is sort of a very, I feel like if you look back at influential zombie adjacent games from 10 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Dead Island, The Last of Us, very, very different tonal things.
I mean, they had one of the best like cinematic like reveal trailers like ever. Like Dead Island just had that rewind, that trailer and rewind and stuff like that was like so memorable.
And the game was nothing like it whatsoever.
It was not.
You know, it had its charm. You hit a lot of, you know, zombies in the face with oars and
I actually just rebought the original because it was on sale for like $3. So I was like, why not? I'll go revisit it. So
IGN has like a final preview up for Dead Island 2, which is presumably actually coming out this year. And it's kind of cool to see what form it's finally taken. I think it's, people seem, you know, cautiously optimistic. I feel like I've had just 9 years of hype fatigue on this. Like I played this before I worked at IGN. I played this at PAX 2014, I think. And that was a different build. This is a completely different game than that. But it's sort of like, it's weird where you just are waiting long enough to actually see a thing firsthand. And I've kind of like almost stopped paying attention. But that said, Akeem, you were saying you're looking forward to this one.
Absolutely. I mean, like, you all know, maybe the listeners or viewers don't know this, but I mean, I love anything like zombie related. So like I was all in on this game. You know, I was willing to wait for however long. I think we got the reveal trailer. What it was last year. Am I correct?
I believe it was like tail end of last year.
The re-reveal
with the Lenny Kravitz guy with the with the samurai sword.
I was like, I'm
here for this. Also, like anytime I get to like, you know, like play around in the city that I live in, you know, California, it takes place in various little different places in LA. I'm all for that. And also like the way you get to kill the zombies in various different ways. It's very creative and gruesome. Like I'm here for this. Like, look at this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. If you're a zombie fan, you know, I think you're going to love this, this game, at least from what I've seen, from what we've been shown. We had our final preview, yesterday. We dropped it yesterday on Monday. And I'm completely sold in this. I honestly don't need to see anything more. I'm here for it.
I do.
Look at that. Did you see that? That was like green blood that just came out of that.
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah, I do love that the character that they our previewer Tristan played as Ryan, is his job is an exotic dancer, but he's dressed as a firefighter. So like he correctly pointed out, go watch the final preview if you haven't seen it. His script is fantastic.
That's a classic stripper trick, is they start off dressed like a police officer or a fireman, and then all of a sudden it's a stripper. Aha, I gotcha.
You know, when firemen go home from work and they take their clothes off, they're technically strippers too. But
that
anyway,
is true, yeah.
Tristan's preview had, I think, maybe the most aggressive wordplay.
Yes.
I was like, I think I had a headache afterwards. I mean, like, I applaud him for it, but also I was like, good Lord, calm down there. But no, I mean, I think the bespoke characters are an interesting choice. Like obviously they kind of are different classes, and the original games had this too. I like the male dancer approach. I think that's like a funny gag. Apparently he just plays like a tank. There's like the ninja girl, which I feel like is a little shadow warrior-y. Like I'm not wild about that, but like, I don't know. I guess I don't know. I didn't love the original. I had fun with it. I'm wary that this is not open world. This is like a bunch of large open areas that are connected with loading screens. And then there's the fact that the traversal is pretty much on the ground. Like
so far from what we've seen. But yeah, it looks like
some billboard parkour back
that
there.
That was
Dying Light too.
Yeah.
I was going to say, why is that in there?
Yeah. Yeah, that was just that was part of the video, was comparing it to, you know, Dying Light, which spawned from Dead Island.
I'm over zombie stuff, like straight up, but I'm a huge horror nerd and I love decapitating creatures and bad guys in games. I wish that this, like, I haven't seen enough yet, but I want this game to have more like more zombie classes, more like weird creatures and nightmarish monsters and stuff like that. And I haven't seen a ton of that. What does interest me though, is this is sort of scratching that Far Cry itch for me. And we haven't had a Far Cry game since 2021, which is Far Cry 6, which I loved. Super, super good game. And also just like same deal, like gorgeous paradise setting meets explosives and hatchets and all sorts of horrible things. But I think with that game, it's very toyetic. There's a lot of like verticality. There's a lot of like, I can, you know, spelunk off this thing, or I can climb up and zip line, or I can fly through the air on this, you know, there's helicopters and stuff like that. And so I want more of that here. I want more like, you know, give me more toys to play with, more vehicles. And right now I'm just seeing a lot of like, you know, hitting people in bikinis in the head with an axe and like, that's fine. But like, I want more, you know, more variety.
Tristan kind of called that out, like saying like, there's cars everywhere. You can't drive any of them, which is like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that was something you could accept in the original Dead Island, where you're like, oh, you're on an island in the middle of nowhere. In this case, it's like,
it was also like the pathways were a lot smaller and stuff like that. They were a lot more segmented and things like that. It wouldn't make sense to need to drive anywhere. And in this maybe case, a boat would have made sense, but
what would have worked in this case though? Like, he calls out that like, this is America. There's, there's theoretically guns everywhere. And he didn't encounter a single gun until like the very end of his preview, which is like the first 5 hours. And then he got a side quest that was like, go find the gun, which is like very funny to me.
One thing I did really like about not only our final preview, but the gameplay trailer they released like a week or two ago, was I didn't see too many zombies repeat themselves. Like, there wasn't too many clones of other zombies. Like, that's something we often run into in these bigger games, where especially we have like multiple enemies like on the screen, you just got these huge swarms, you're always going to see one or two enemies that are, at least one or two enemies that are repeating. I didn't really see any repeating in these trailers, and like, I haven't gone through and like notated like, okay, this one's here, so don't come for me in the comments, but from a just a casual watching, like, every zombie looks unique to me, minus I think a couple of them in like cop uniforms or whatever, which makes sense. But I thought that's a really cool thing, and that kind of shows how far like games have come. Like, we just kind of expect when you boot up GTA like online, you're gonna see, you know, twins and triplets just walking down the street every four blocks. Like, it's just kind of, you know, par for the course. But you don't really see much of that in this trailer. So I'm hoping that they do stick the landing.
There's like kind of like a big boomer looking dude in the trailer. Yeah. There's a bunch of like super zombies they show off in the trailer, along with a ton of gunplay, which I think Tristan called that out, being like, that looks promising. I think it was sort of towards the end of his preview. He's like, seems like this could get a little repetitive, but you know, let's see what happens. I think like, I always love it when that's actually one of my biggest hangups of The Last of Us, is that there's really only like, there's like clickers and there's boomers, and then there's like the Rat King or whatever. Like,
stalkers. There's stalkers as well. Yeah.
But I mean, I wish that they had more variations. I wish they did weirder stuff with mushroom, but at the same time, that is kind of, that's more monster of the week than like the sort of prestige horror that they go for. In this case, they can go completely wackadoo and have like giant golem zombies or whatever. And like,
so what you're saying is you might actually be interested in playing Wolong Fallen Dynasty.
That's a good segue right there. Are there all sorts of
creatures? There are like tiger beasts and like giant zombie gorillas and stuff that you can fight that are in there. I played a whole bunch of Wolong over the last couple weeks. It's a fantastic Souls like game. It's a little bit on the easier end, because a lot of the main story missions and even the side missions, they automatically give you like an NPC to help you out. The best way I can kind of summarize this is, if you ever watch the show Kingdom on Netflix, which has the story of the Three Kingdoms, mixed with but also had like undead and zombies and like Dynasty Warriors, because you're used to like a lot of those characters like Lu Bu and Xiao Xiao and Liu Bei. Like, there's all these like generals that you're used to seeing if you've played a Dynasty Warriors game that are here in this story, which makes sense. It's telling the same era of time of feudal China. I hope it's feudal China. I probably got that wrong. Comments are going to come for me. Whatever. Anyways, it's a fantastic game. It's got some good challenge to it. There's a few difficulty spikes. It's very Souls-like, but you also get like, there's a lot of magic that you get in it. So like, there's five phases. You have fire, water, earth, metal, and What's the last one I'm missing?
Heart. Wood? It's usually
earth?
Heart.
I think it's that's, wood or
yeah.
earth.
It's love.
That's
love?
Captain Planet rules, yeah.
Yes. and each of them have different, like, perks and stuff. So, like, I went for a pretty much almost a pure water build, which gave me a bonus to, like, my stealth, my backstabs, and made it harder for me to be detected. Also gave me a really cool little invisibility a spell that I could cast. It was great for clearing through the stages. I would not recommend it for your first time through, though, because it does not do you much good in boss fights. You cannot turn invisible if you have been detected. So, but the rest of the stuff is great to get some backstabs and just kind of, you know, decapitate people that don't know you're there. But it's got some great, fantastic, over-the-top bosses. It's got a lot of missions. I'm still finishing up my New Game Plus playthrough. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. There's a ton of different weapons, good variety, upgrades and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a solid. I agree with, like, I think we gave it an 8 out of 10 on IGN, and I think I agree with that score.
Nice.
Have any of you guys checked this one out yet? I know it's on Game Pass.
Yeah. I played the first few hours and then got distracted by another thing that's coming out soon. But I really liked what I played so far. I wasn't wild about the kind of generic zombie bad guys you fight early mm-hmm. on. Apparently, it's going to be a running theme for me today, is complaining about that. But no,
besides some of the creatures I mentioned, there is a little bit of a enemy diversity issue. Like, it's it's either those human zombie things, the tigers, the these gorilla looking things, and then there's like sea witches, like mermaid hag things that you fight.
Sure.
And I think so,
I'm like historically terrible at parrying in games. I platinum Bloodborne without really being good at that, and I know a lot of people think that's insane, but like,
I hate that.
I'm
boss.
Just it's I would I would rather just be like an like aggressive in your face, kick your ass type of dude, rather than just like backstep, parry, shield, retort, like all that. I hate all that stuff. Like, and I just don't have the right timing for it, despite the fact that like I make music in real life. I like that rhythm side of it.
Breaks. Like, you're excellent at like just parrying in conversation. Like, you're very good at just deflecting and riposte. Like,
for video games, it just doesn't click with me the same way. And so, like, I struggled a little bit with that here.
Something we periodically talk about is, PlayStation Plus and the state of it. Akeem, you have some strong feelings on the matter. Would you care to elucidate us? I got you right when you're just taking a sip from your canteen. That was
I had to take a nice long swig of water because, honestly, Max, I hate to do what I'm about to do, but I'm going to have to cook PlayStation for just a bit. I love them, but I got to cook them right now. Now, we heard back in February that the PS Plus collection is going away come May, and I immediately got unnerved, wondering what this might mean for my current subscription tier. Now, I chose the premium tier, which is the highest tier, because I really wanted to play some classic PS1, PS2, and PS3 games. So I had to figure out, what exactly does this mean? That the PS Plus collection is going away. Like, how will this affect the main reason I or anyone else that opted for the highest level? Well, I did my research and I found out that the PS Plus collection is essentially 20 game titles from the PS4 generation. Now, you got your Bloodborne, you got your Fallout 4, Days Gone, many others, all soon to be gone from that particular offering. And the PS Plus collection is currently available for you no matter which tier you're subscribed to. Obviously for a limited time now. And even though these 20 titles are in fact going away come May 9th, not too long, you can download them now before they go away. Just make sure you have enough space. Now, the thing is, it really sucks that these titles are going away, but it leads me to wonder why PlayStation decided to do this in the first place. Like, is there a reason why PlayStation is getting rid of games like God of War, The Last Guardian, Bloodborne come May? Like, what if I want them to think about the people right now, all right? What if there's a person out there that hasn't had the chance to pick up a PS5 console just yet? You know, like, maybe their birthday is in July and that's when their parents are going to get it for them. I'll give you an example. I know this one guy, only one guy whose birthday is on May 10th, and he's planning to use the money he's going to get for his birthday to purchase a PS5 the next day, but he'll be 2 days too late to take advantage of the PS Plus collection by then. So, sucks for him. Sorry, Jeremy. Love you, man. Now that the PS5 console is more readily accessible, why not allow the PS Plus collection to stay on the subscription service for a little while longer, like maybe a year more? Like, give those folks that just acquired the console a chance to download and play those games with their subscription tier. Like, speaking about myself though, personally, I bought the premium for those. I bought the premium for those classic console games, excluding last gen titles. So, I mean, if I'm being quite honest, you know, I really don't give a huh about what they're doing with the PS4 titles. I got my PS4 right here. I still got it plugged in. But I do wonder, and I do fear, if this might be a precursor to something larger than the removal of certain PS4 titles from the PS collection. Like, will PlayStation possibly retool the premium tier and remove its PSP, PS3, or PS2 offerings? Like, I'm going to tell you right now, like, if they touch anything PS1 related on the PS5 and remove that possibility of me playing those games on there, I'm going to freaking rage. Like, Legend of the Dragoon, beautiful game. It was my JRPG jam back in the PS1 era. And being able to return to the beautiful, majestic world of indiness on my PS5 console has brought so much nostalgic joy to me. So I'm hoping that things like will remain the same regarding the premium tier. Like, the PS Plus collection might be going away, yes, but talking to you right now, PlayStation, Mr. PlayStation, I'm talking to you. So help me, God of War, wherever he is, heaven, hell, I don't know where he is killing gods right now. If you touch anything else related to the premium tier list, I will cancel my subscription without hesitation, with the quickness and the strength of 1,000 suns burning in the imprint with the Teletubby baby face coming towards Earth to annihilate it. I'm just talking now. Now, let's just hope, though. Let's just hope, before I get too angry here on this podcast, there's no more shakeups with what will be available on PlayStation subscription service. As for now, though, PS5 owners, download those games that you want from the PS Plus collection while you can, because PlayStation is tripping. They're tripping, or I'm tripping. Am I tripping, guys?
No.
No, for sure.
With you. I'm with you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Akeem, but we can just add, if users haven't done it, so they can just add it to their library, correct? They don't need to download it.
I think you need to access the PS Plus collection from
your PS5.
Yes,
you have to be on a PS5, but yeah. I believe you only have to add it to library. You don't actually have to physically download it and put it on your console.
See, from what I read, I didn't read anything like that. I read that you have to download them. So I don't, you know, I might be wrong though. I might be wrong, Jada, and I don't want to feed misinformation to our audience, but I didn't read anything like that. I read that, you know, you need to download these. So, I mean, you're removing these, they're removing these games from the PS collection. So I don't know if you can just download from the library and you would still have access to it without actually having it saved onto like a hard drive of some sort.
Unless they're doing something special, as PlayStation Plus has always been, any game that you get from a PS Plus subscription, as long as you add it to your library during the time when it's free, you can re-access it as long as your subscription is live. So yes,
I think what the PS Plus collection, specifically that batch of 15 games or whatever it was, you have to access those from a PS5.
Yes, you do have to be on a PS5 to access them.
So let's talk about that. So that's,
yeah.
This was, I think, supposed to make it more appealing to get a PS5, which is cool. It's awesome. Since the PlayStation 5 launched, a couple things have happened. One, the price has gone up in a bunch of territories. And two, the new PlayStation Plus tiers have been introduced, which, you know, admittedly have a bunch of other cool other games you can check out and stuff. But it seems like kind of a bummer that the PlayStation Plus collection has been removed. Like, if you bought in day one for PlayStation and PlayStation 5 and PlayStation Plus, you paid less to get more effectively. Yep. So I don't know. It feels like kind of shrinkflation situation. And I mean, we're also the moral of the story is there. I don't know. There isn't one, because PlayStation 5 is selling great. So there's not really any reason to incentivize people to jump on board with this. And it's sort of like there is an alternative to the collection, where there's a bunch of other games in the library. There's kind of rotating stuff coming through for PS Plus, depending on what tier you get. But it does suck that that's not there anymore, you know?
There are some people that probably missed out on. I have some friends that missed out on the PS4 generation, and, you know, they're planning on getting the PS5, you know, and they're going to, you know, choose probably the lowest subscription tier. And they would, if they chose that, they would have access to those 20 titles. But, you know, they're not going to get it, you know, it's going to be past May. So they're going to miss out on that opportunity to kind of, you know, experience those games while you're subscribing to that particular tier. And I just don't understand now that, you know, PS5s are now more readily accessible. You can go to a Best Buy, you can purchase one. I don't understand. I'm just trying to figure out what's the logic behind removing this feature. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it doesn't have anything to do with what, you know, we are currently offered on like the premium tier. So
it's to sell, it's to sell you those games individually, which is something like, you know, Nintendo's been doing for years and to great success. But also to eventize when they do roll those games in piecemeal to their monthly subscription services. So they can go like, hey, The Last of Us is available, you know, in November, and make a big deal out of it. But for anybody else who bought a PS5 day one, we're kind of sitting there being like, yeah, you already did that for us. And then you took it away and then you're making a big deal about giving it back. Every console generation is somebody's first PlayStation. Like, that's the thing I think a lot of us lose track of. I mean, we don't, obviously, because, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, obviously, and we buy every PlayStation every time they come out. But every single time there's people that listen to the show or they check out IGN, they go listen to all PlayStation podcasts, and they go like, oh, I never owned a PlayStation until a PS5. And the PS5 now, like you just said, Akeem, is finally at the point where it's, you don't have to battle scalpers for it. You don't have to go on eBay. You can just walk into a store and pick one up, right? With relative ease. It's still, you know, it's still selling like crazy. This is the point in the life cycle where it's like going to absolutely skyrocket. It's going to take off. It's outselling the Switch in Japan for the first time in its history, right? And that's, it's kind of a dying market for PlayStation over there. And so like the fact that the value of it is going down, the price is going up, and it's getting more readily available everywhere, is just a bunch of things that don't sit well with me. It reminds me of a couple of years ago when the regular PlayStation Plus that we paid for monthly dropped from like 4 games to 2 games. Mm-hmm. And we all said like, is the price going down? And it's like, no, it's still the same price. Like, can you throw in, are you throwing in anything else in there? No. What are you going to do? Not play games online? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I try not to, but sure. My single player games mostly. I mean, I can... But like, yeah, the value went down, the price stayed the same, and I think that sucks for consumers.
I can understand if they, if the PlayStation Plus collection meant cutting a bunch of third-party stuff, you know? Like, if they were like, oh, we got to get rid of Mortal Kombat 11 and Biohazard because it's costing us too much money to give that out for free to anybody who, you know, pays 10 bucks for a month or whatever. But for the stuff that Sony owns, it just seems kind of like, maybe celebrate your catalog. You know, like you're still charging $70 for The Last of Us Part One. Maybe you let people play the one from 2014 or whatever. Like, just is it the end of the world?
I mean, The Last of Us is the end of the world. That's the whole plot. But yeah, no, The Last of Us, and I think The Last of Us Remastered.
Sneak that in.
I know. Them selling The Last of Us Remastered for $70 and selling a bunch of copies probably put a little fire under their ass where they're like, oh, let's just keep doing that. Because there was also that rumor of that remaster or remake of Horizon Zero Dawn, right? And it's like, oh, if they can like upscale, and like redo textures and some minor gameplay elements in a bunch of games from 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago and sell them for $70 a piece, they'll do that over giving you 20 games for air quotes free, right?
Yeah.
And so like, I think what sucks is that like, we're coming up on a year of like the PlayStation Premium Plus extra tier stuff. And I don't feel like that subscription model has really panned out in the way I was promised. I feel like the library of classic games is kind of slim right now. Mm-hmm. And the free games every month have been pretty cool here and there. And like, there are definitely some really strong months, and compared to Games with Gold, which is just anemic, it's awesome. But in general, I feel like they're not doing enough with the subscription model right now. And they're taking stuff away, and it's just not really where it needs to be.
I think that the thing is that the PlayStation Plus collection, it predates the tiered system, which
it does.
Yeah. I mean, there's other stuff to play. There's plenty of stuff to play.
There is.
Which actually brings us to our next topic. There's actually, and this, I love that we just bitch about PlayStation charging for things too much. They're also having a huge sale. There's a great deal on all sorts of games. But I figure we could all kind of run down some of the games that jumped out at us. There's, I mean, this is like, you know, this is cheaper than a hamburger or a cup of coffee. So like, it's kind of nuts that you can get like a giant AAA video game for like $5. So yeah, Brian, you want to kick this off?
Sure. So two of the games I picked, one of them is the Capcom Beat 'em Up collection. I'm like an old school arcade beat 'em up dude. I really like games like Final Fight basically, and Double Dragon, the recent Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, I think is like one of the best beat 'em ups ever made.
I think that makes 2 weeks we mentioned Double Dragon in a row on the show.
Oh man,
that's great, right? Bring it back.
Yeah, let's keep doing that. This episode is brought to you by Double Dragon.
Yeah.
I don't know, this is a really cool collection. I think it's kind of slept on. Like, we got some awesome collections over the last few years, like the Disney Afternoon collection. We got the Castlevania and Contra and the Konami Shooter collection. And it's been a really cool way to sort of like get a bunch of old games, both like really well-known and not very well-known, and put them kind of in one box. And this is just like an awesome roundup of a bunch of games that are really fun to play with somebody else in couch co-op. Like these are awesome. Just like crack a beer on a Saturday afternoon, sit down with your friend and just beat up a bunch of, you know, weird old like 80s thugs. And they're just fun as hell. And yeah. So like this is 7 classic beat 'em ups under one umbrella. And I think, or umbrella as Hakeem says. And there it's on sale right now. I forget what's the price I put in there, Max?
$10.
$10. Yeah. Super, super great deal. I used to spend that just beating one of these games in the arcade. So
that's less money than two fistfuls of rotisserie chickens, which is what Mike Hagar has for lunch every day, assuming he doesn't find them in a garbage can, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you can get 2 Costco rotisserie chickens for $10. So you could do that too.
Do the Mike Hagar special.
Mm-hmm. The other one I threw in there is Horizon Chase, which is not part of the Aloy cinematic universe or whatever.
Sure?
But
could be.
Yeah.
It's the next VR game.
Yeah. I mean, it might have taken place beforehand. Is it? So this is another old school arcade style game. It's kind of like that game, is it Outrun? The old Sega arcade game where like mm-hmm. the guy like brings his girlfriend on a date and then they almost kills her 60 times by flipping the car over a ton. So this is a basically like a hyper stylish, very just neon dripped, just gorgeous 80s arcade racing game. And this is $3.99 right now. This is like legitimately, I think, one of the best modern racing games. I think aesthetically it's stunning. It's like really low poly. The music is just fantastic. It's really, really cool. It's got a ton of courses in it. And it's just super fun to play. So yeah, if you're looking for just like an awesome arcade racing game to play on your PS5 or PS4, grab this game. $4. I wholeheartedly give it my all and tell you that you should buy this game. It's great.
All right. Jada?
All right. I'll keep it in the old school classic first. So Streets of Rage 4. Brian was talking about beat 'em ups. Streets of Rage was kind of like, for me, the pinnacle of growing up on the Sega Genesis, you know, playing as Axel, Blaze, just going through and beating up baddies. The kangaroo. And then, you know, so Streets of Rage 4 came out, I want to say it was 2021.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of years, but fantastic. It's like TMNT Shredder's Revenge. It is a stellar way of updating a classic arcade and bringing it into like with modern.
They understood the assignment.
They understood the assignment 110%. So good. Yeah. It is fantastic. It's $12.50 right now. It's usually $25, so it's half off. If you want, you can get the there's also the Mr. X DLC, which adds like customizable 3 new characters. You can customize your characters' move sets and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I think that's what, $3.50, $4?
$4
for that. That's usually like $8, so also half off. So you get the whole thing for like $16-$17. 100% recommend. Like I don't even need to mention other points. Like Brian mentioned all the great beat 'em up points playing at couch co-op with a friend. The other one,
let's speed run this week.
Yeah, speed run. Bayonetta and Vanquish combo. If you have never played Bayonetta or Vanquish, you are missing out because these are fantastic high intensity action games. Bayonetta, I don't need to tell you about. You know what Bayonetta is. Vanquish, however, Vanquish is a game where you play as this dude in this like suit and you have like jets on like your all over your suit so you can slide around and basically like shoot people in the back of the head like before they can shoot you. It's just a fantastic over the top action. It's very sci-fi. It's very just stylish. It's great. Highly recommend. And it's like $13-$14.
Nice. Akeem, what about you?
Yeah, clearly Jada and Brian are just like, y'all have bags of money. Cause I mean, like I went the cheapest route I could possibly go. And also I'm super excited and hyped for Dead Island 2, which is going to be dropping in about a week, next week. So I chose Dead Island Retro Revenge, which is only 75 cents currently.
Good God.
In the PlayStation Store. 75 cents. It's 74, but I round up. So, you know, just take 3/4. It's all you need. It's a 16-bit side-scroller game. It's very similar to Streets of Rage. You play a guy named Max who's traversing through a zombie-infested streets of California
looking
for
dead
his
island.
Yeah, yeah. He's looking for his dog named Peppers. Wow. Actually,
that doesn't look anything like me. It looks like Jack Black and Brutal Legend. What's going on with that?
Totally does. He's actually looking for a cat. Okay. So yeah, it's you get to you know do like magical attacks. You get to do lots of kicks as this person is clearly doing.
It's like using melee weapons. All
right. What else we got?
Also, I was going to mention Metal Slug 3, but I want to round back to Dead Island. The definitive edition is also available. It's 85% off. It's $2.99. So if you want to like prepare yourself for Dead Island 2, you can pick up the definitive edition and Riptide, which is $2.99, and just kind of like cram that. Do some homework for what's in store for you. You know, when you pick up Dead Island 2.
Nice. Two recommendations for me. I've sung these praises a million times. Sleeping Dogs Definitive Edition, one of the best open world games that does not get enough love. You play as an undercover cop who's in the streets beating people up, doing all kinds of bad stuff that the police aren't supposed to do. You actually get docked cop points for doing that, like hitting parking meters. Game. And then flip side of that is Yakuza Kiwami, where you play as a criminal who goes around doing good things for the neighborhood and helps people out. Kiwami's always my recommendation to start that series with. Zero is also a good starting point, but it's also a massive sprawling game with tons of twists and turns, whereas Kiwami is kind of a short and sweet introduction to those characters. It's just a remake of the first game from a million years ago, so check that out if you want to. That is those are both under $5, which is pretty good deal. So good time to be having a gift card with some spare change on it, or you could just buy Dead Island by putting ¾ in your disc slot. Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
On that note, we got to wrap things up. We'll be back next week with presumably some very exciting things to talk about. I don't know what's coming out next week. Could be something cool. It's also a very special game's anniversary. It's Bloodborne's birthday. Happy birthday, Bloodborne. Ooh, we'll be talking about that, course. Probably.
And also, if you want to find out what's in those boxes, you got to come back next week.
Yeah, apparently we need to get to that. It's Chekhov's boxes. You get to check off those boxes because we're not going to explain what's in them. Anyway.
It just looks like you guys are part of like the drug cartel or something.
It's just like the worst set dressing. Okay. We just got a cardboard box and just like a horrible package here. Anyway, for those of you listening at home, you missed out on the mystery boxes. We'll hopefully solve that mystery next week. Thank you all for watching and listening, or both, or neither, whichever. Thank you. We love you. Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond.